Hello everyone, and welcome to This Nintendo Life, episode 271. My name is NBZ, and it's been a little while since we've done like a bit of a regular episode.
We've actually both been on a plane for the first time in a while. Normally it's just you jetting off at the moment, but yeah, yes. I was in Barcelona seeing some friends, and you were over in San Francisco at GDC, having a great time.
Yeah, I feel like... So last episode, I did a solo segment, and then the episode before that, what happened? We did there was something else that happened, but we've had to... Oh, the jukebox segment, right? Jukebox. So it's been a while since we've talked about video games.
Yes.
So we're going to try and correct that today and get back to it. But Paul, how are you doing? You're in that new house now.
In the new
house.
I feel
like you're getting there in terms of settling in, but how's it going?
Yeah, Bally Jr.'s starting at his new nursery on Monday. He's already had his settled days, and they went well, so that is... Two thumbs up from me and Caroline, because that saves us a very long drive to his old nursery. Well, long drive in terms of UK long drive, not long drive for an American, I'm sure. But yeah, we're getting the house the way we like it. It's going to take a lot of time because we're trying to find the time to...
A lot of money.
Yeah, because you take leave in order to move house, and then you get behind on a bit of work. And then because Bally Jr.'s old nursery was so far away, we were losing out a little bit of work time in order to just get him to nursery. Mm. So we got behind on more work. So now that he is at his new nursery, we're going to be able to catch up on work. But by catching up on work, because we work from home, it's going to mean we're going to have less time to do actual stuff to the house. So it's like this vicious cycle of like, are we ever going to get the time?
It's also never nice to take off time where it's like, well, I'm not really taking this time off. Like, I'm going to have to do something that is an obligation that is like, it's not relaxing or taking a holiday or whatever. It's like...
Yeah, totally. But I mean, that already happens when you have a kid, because you spend most of your holidays seeing family who want to see Bally
Jr. See the child,
so you're already left like, well, that felt like a half holiday. I didn't have to do any work. That was great, but I don't feel any less tired. So what's
There is no recuperation time, which is...
It might take a little longer than we maybe first thought, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
That's cool.
Been gaming a little bit around the edges.
Yeah, absolutely. Always got to get a little bit of gaming in there. So, Bally, what are we going to talk about on today's show?
For the first segment, we're going to talk about the games that we have been playing. And the second segment, we're going to do some emails.
Absolutely. Back to it. The regular old video game show. So, let's...
Back to the pepper grind.
The pepper grind. Yes, a good segue there. So, Bally, we both checked out the brand new release from Devolver Digital that came out, made by a solo developer, I believe. R. Eck is the developer's name. When I was going through the credits, I was like, oh, yeah, one guy made it, which is pretty cool. And it seems like it was a long project, like 7 years or something. So, you know, solo development sometimes takes a while, obviously, because if you're going to do that and you don't have it as your full-time job, you're probably just doing it in your free time, right? Just chipping away stuff like that. So this has been promoted quite a bit by Nintendo. It was part of Indie Worlds in the past, I believe, and I think both of us just got curious about it because it basically takes like one mechanic from one of our favorite games, Ori and the Will of the Wisps, which is the kind of drilling through the earth mechanic, which in that game you also kind of drill through the water eventually.
It's more or less identical mechanic, I want to say, in Ori. It doesn't feel too different, I don't believe.
No, and so like the idea in that game was you got this upgrade that let you essentially burrow through sand, and there were platforming challenges associated with that, and you know, moments where you're underground and there's you know, saw blades going past and you have to dodge out the way. And like, obviously if you're going to make a game like this, you're going to do a similar thing, and so Pepper Grinder definitely has a bunch of that stuff going on with it. But Bally, we have both played it and finished it. It's not too long of a game. I think it took me 3.5 hours total. It was it's a really nice, you know, I do appreciate games that I can play and listen to stuff at the same time. It has like a good podcast game feel to it, and platformers are always good for that. So I did appreciate that. But yeah, it'd be good to just get your thoughts, initial thoughts on this game.
Yeah, I probably took a bit longer. I definitely had some issues with that final boss. I was just handling it the wrong way and had to stop and think like, why am I doing this? I need to have a completely different strategy, and then that completely different strategy worked. But I was really interested how far they'd go with this mechanic, and in all honesty, I don't think they went that far with it, and I think the general pace of the levels was a lot more stop-start than I thought it would be, and by the end of the game, it felt like a lot of the kind of most special, unique levels, they'd actually veer away from the main mechanic entirely and introduce a separate mechanic that I don't really want to spoil, so I was surprised at that. The whole game was maybe a little slower paced for the most part than I thought it would be. And I'm not saying I was disappointed that it was slower paced. I think what the game's going for, it does really well. There's some issues where a lot of the hitboxes around enemies and certain bosses, and it's very finicky, and sometimes the animation doesn't clearly...
It's inconsistent in a way, right?
It's inconsistent. But overall, I had a really good time. Like, it's not a top echelon platformer by any means, I would say, but it's a really good time. And I think if you like platformers like we obviously do on this show, I don't think you can really miss this one. I think it's definitely worth playing.
It's really nice. Like, you know, I was tweeting, like, oh no, I haven't finished a game in March just because things have been crazy.
And then you finished two.
Yeah, Final Fantasy is, like, way too fucking long for its own good. But Matt Lorigan on Twitter was like, hey, this is a Pepper Grinder game. This seems like a pretty good one to... He was like, yeah, I've just played, like, in an afternoon. I was like, all right, that sounds perfect. And I was already interested, but you can't sell me on a game harder than saying it's 2.5 to 3 hours long, and I'm already interested in it. I was like, oh, great. Like, if Pepper Grinder on how long to beat was 8 hours, I don't think I would have bought it, which I think is like a weird backwards way. It's a weird backwards way in which we approach games, as opposed to I think most regular people who play games who are like, I need to get the most money for my buck, right?
Or part of the dopamine hit for us is the credits and having this discussion where we've both beaten the game and then rinse and repeat. Like, that is a fun process.
Yeah, totally. And so, anytime that, you know, I know that game is short, I'm like, oh, fucking sign me up, baby. Even if I'm not that interested in it, if it's like, oh, do I really want to play Open Roads? And like, turns out I didn't want to play Open Roads because I started it. And
I want to play Open Roads.
Well, the thing is, I started it and it was first person, like without a thing to hang you in the world. It's like motion sick city.
Has it gone home?
Gone Home's like that as well, right? The Witness. Any game that is like a first-person narrative or puzzle thing, I can't do it because of motion sickness.
I thought it was the same developer as Gone Home, that's what I meant.
Oh, it is! So that's a weird story that's like a whole to-do. But yes, Open Roads originally was Fulbright. Then they had allegations against Steve Gaynor, the head of Fulbright. And so basically what happened is everyone left the studio and made their own studio and took the game with them, and so Steve Gaynor is like on his own just with the Fulbright name now, essentially. So
weird.
It's a weird situation. So and I think that's kind of
and
why
Fulbright made Open Roads.
No, Fulbright originally Fulbright was the developer, but when they left the studio behind, they changed their name to the Open Roads team. So the developer's name is the Open Roads team, and they are separate now from Fulbright.
But Pepper Grinder.
But Pepper Grinder is a video game. I enjoy it as well. And I think it is you're very right to be like, it's not a top tier platform. And I totally agree with that. There's a few things within it that make it a little less streamlined, a little more, it chafes a bit at the edges. And I think there's enough of that that it doesn't quite hit the peaks. And I think this was best kind of shown when I first played the initial boss, right? You do those first few levels and they're fun and they're enjoyable and like it feels like there's good pace to it and all
that
stuff.
Bosses are much tougher than the levels.
Yes, the boss. And the boss just is finicky in a way that I didn't appreciate, where, you know, there's three phases to it, and it's one of those like you gotta wait for a specific opening. As you know, Bally, my least favorite type of boss design is like you can't damage them except for when it's this one moment. And so it's a lot of dodging around in the sand waiting. But like the way that those bullets in the second phase, the purple ones, track towards your character, it felt a little unfair, but also like the speed with which you go around and the amount of maneuverability you had within that kind of thin arc of sand, it just felt like the game didn't give you enough leeway to deal with it. And so it led to a lot of, okay, I'm just going to keep trying to like get into this corner so I don't move. But then, you know, it's I found it frustrating because I was down the bottom on like the right hand side. I was like, okay, follow me all the way up, and then the beetle would just turn around and be like, okay, I guess go through the motions of like going the opposite way up, so get all the way up, and then you hit its belly, and then it does a weird thing where like it's simultaneously a boss fight where you have to wait for something, but then also it's a boss fight where you can do way more damage than is necessary. I got into a flow state of when I got to the ground and the guy fell off the beetle, I would basically like knock him into the wall, but I'd just be standing there with my grinder going, and he'd just ping himself onto the grinder, just like wall bouncing into my damage machine essentially. And so I was able to eventually three cycle it, so you basically through three cycles of it, and that made it a lot easier because I found that kind of that hack, because I was doing like 40% of his health on the first one and then 40% on the second, and the last 20% took one more try. But I think that was the first moment where I was like, this is cool, but I feel like it doesn't quite have the polish that you would want from a game like this. And I think that's tricky sometimes, right? Because as a solo developer, you only have so many resources, and obviously it's one vision that they have, but sometimes like it doesn't completely work all the way. And I think it's kind of what this game is. Because I think you can see the love that's gone into it. You can see the years of work because like you said, there are mechanics that get thrown in and you're like, oh wow, this must have taken ages to like program and put this in here. Like this is a totally different thing and a different mode of play this level is built around. You can see the love that's gone into it. But you're right in that sometimes that distracts from the core enjoyment, which I do think the core enjoyment really is zooming through sand bits quickly and collecting all the gems, and there's a real satisfying sound effect of like collecting all the gems and then moving on. Like even though I knew that at the end of the day I wasn't really going to spend these gems, I wasn't going to buy a lot of outfits or whatever, like I bought one outfit at the beginning and changed my hair and then I just stayed that for the rest of the game, there's still an inherent dopamine. I think this is why Mario is so successful. It's like collecting coins in Mario, it's fucking pointless. Like it just doesn't matter anymore, but you still want to do it. You still want to do it because there's a joy in getting the thing and hearing the noise and seeing the thing disappear. Right. And that's what
they're like the yellow paint of 2D platformers as well.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's, for me, that's their main use, a bit like the gems in this game, for example. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I agree with you about that boss. Like I think there's some finicky parts, and I found that just the pure hitbox of like hitting the beetle, like it wasn't always clear. It was very inconsistent,
especially because you have to, there's a mechanic that I think is a little it sometimes just doesn't feel like it worked properly, which is jumping out of the sand, which is where you get the blue kind of effect on your character and you can go much further. And there's definitely parts later where there's like a kind of grapple mechanic and you're grappling and going into and you're grappling and you're going into. And those were the moments where like the A or the jumping out of the sand, if you mess that up, you had to restart a whole sequence again, and it just felt like that there's just an inconsistency to when you pressed it. So
I also find like the base mechanic, now I feel like I need to kind of go back to Ori Will of the Wisps and see how that feels, but the base mechanic reminded me of the very first time that you're playing Mario Galaxy and you're on a spherical sphere and a sphere, and you go on, you're running around this small planet and you run to the opposite side, and then all of a sudden, because you're on the opposite side and then you let go of the analog stick and then move again, the controls almost reset and you kind of go off in a direction you weren't expecting. So game kind of trains you into not removing your finger from the analog stick and continuing in a certain direction. It's kind of the feeling when you're pepper grinding underground, and you kind of at certain points it feels like you're moving the analog stick in the direction of on the screen you want to go, and other times it feels like you're actually steering a bit like a car, and sometimes it feels like it flips between them, especially when you go out of the sand and then into the sand again. And this happened, this was one of the issues I had on the final boss. Like you're going out of the sand, into the sand constantly. Yeah. And the controls for being out of the sand versus in the sand are very different. And as a result, I was nosediving to my death constantly because I wasn't, it wasn't clear to me, and I hadn't really done it much in the game up until then.
Right.
That feeling of going out of sand, into sand, out of sand, and into sand again. Like, it wasn't very clear, and I don't know, I just needed a little more. If that's what a key focus of the game is going to be, I needed to do it more to get good at it rather than have that just kind of appear at the end of the game. Like, it felt very tough.
That second phase in particular, where it's so easy to fall to your death, there were so many moments where I would pop out of one side of the screen and try and hit one of those balls at the other side, and I would graze it and fall to my death because I hadn't been trained properly in what the momentum should be to get across. So that's a really good point. Yeah, I definitely feel that.
It made me on that final boss slow it right down. I essentially had four moves that I knew I could pull off to get from orb to orb without dying, and I just had to repeat those again and again and again and again. Going from my safe zone to safe zone to safe zone across him doing damage, and that was the only way. Like,
It doesn't reward kind of reckless play, that stuff, which is, it feels in many ways, this game feels like Sonic the Hedgehog, right? Like, there is
it's antithetical to the idea of the trailers, arguably, where you're speeding underground and doing a thing, when really a lot of these levels, and especially some of those boss fights, like we just said, are much slower and methodical.
Yeah, you need to be careful because you have such limited health that any slip of the finger means that you're going to die very quickly. And so, it has that feel of Sonic where, like, the dream is, oh, I'm going to be blitzing around and I can hit this boss a bunch of times. And I'm sure speedrunners can pull that off, right? And they know all the momentum stuff and know the patterns by that point to where they are just zipping through these things like nothing and they're never going to fall to their death. But when you are playing it for the first time and you're trying to figure it out, you do have to step back from that and think, okay, yes, this momentum stuff feels cool and fun, but I'm dying because I keep messing it up. And so it's actually better for me to just stand to the side while this attack happens, then do the safe jump across that I know I will make and hit him in the middle as I do that, right? And so it does lead to a little bit less excitement, I would say, at the end. But I think by that point, especially because the way the bosses are tuned, you're almost like, I just need to get through this. Because it feels like some of the levels are super easy and very easy to get through. And then there's one end game level in particular where I was like, oh my God, this is really kicking my ass. But I think the thing is, like, I was still enjoying myself the whole time, right?
Too,
I wasn't that frustrated that I had to fight the boss a bunch. Because I was like, inherently, I still like moving around. And the core mechanic just feels good in a way that I enjoy it.
I was frustrated on that final boss's second phase until I worked out this is how I stop killing myself constantly.
Yeah.
But until then, I was like, oof, I'm not vibing with this endgame. Mm-hmm. But I agree, the other bosses, as finicky as they are in part, still had a really good time and I didn't mind the challenge. And I kind of got used to the kind of wavy, floaty nature of the movement. Like, it kind of... Do you think it's interesting that all the enemies in this game are narwhals?
I didn't even really notice that. I was like, oh, okay.
So they've all got that horn.
They all got the horn,
I feel like it's a reference that we're like a dolphin and the enemies are narwhals because you're kind of doing the dolphin dive, Echo the Dolphin kind of thing. I don't know if...
They're like they're sand whales, essentially, I guess,
I don't know if I'm making that up or...
That makes sense, though, right? Because some of them burrow into the ground. Like, initially, when you come across those enemies, they drop out those nests in the sky.
Yes.
And they burrow down and they kind of chase you... The sand is water in that sense, and so they are essentially sand whales, right? So
I think that the whole look of the game is incredibly Devolver. Like, it's really weird. I'd say it looks really Nickelodeon in many ways. Mm. Like, it's just got this really zany art style. The world building is so bizarre, and like
it's a far more honest and naked pixel art style than I think I'm used to seeing these days, and I do appreciate it. Like, it's interesting because it feels like there's elements of 3D in there, like crunchy pixel art that also has kind of rotary elements to it. Like, the enemies feel like they have a bit of depth to them, which is interesting. And the world as well, which I enjoyed quite a bit.
Definitely. And like the sound design on your pepper grinder, like the engine and the grinding sound and the vibration of the switch pad, like, felt that all came together really nicely. Like, it was a real
playing
good
a handheld
feel.
With HD Rumble was super nice. Mm. Like, it just it's satisfying to go through the sand and have that feedback as you are, as you're pushing through it, right? Like, I think it comes together really nicely from a feel and from a just aesthetic perspective. I think it's all really good. Did you go after the kind of coins in the levels, the kind of Mario Galaxy, like the green coin medals? Because there are levels hidden behind those. So if you have 10 coins, then you can buy a key, and the key unlocks one bonus level per world, I believe. I don't know if there's any more hidden levels I missed, but I found that, you know, I had enough coins for each world by the end, where I was like, oh, I actually kind of have a surplus here. So I don't mind it in this way, because there are certain games where it does that, and it's like, it's always a struggle to get the required amount. And usually in those cases, I just ignore it, because I'm like, I hate this form of unlocking stuff. But because there was an added like level of scrutiny that you had to apply to levels to find where those coins were, I enjoyed the process of finding them. I really enjoyed the process of like looking for the cracks in the wall, like the little parts of the textured environment where you can see the slight crackling, and it's super satisfying to drill into that and open up the space and be like, oh, I got a coin for figuring that out, and for being smart and scouting that was there. So yeah, in this case, I didn't mind the fact that I was, you know, collecting those coins in order to unlock the extra levels. And to be fair, the extra levels are really cool. Like, they have different mechanics to them, and they feel worth going after, because it's new parts of the experience. They're not just recycled stuff. It's like, oh, here's a brand new mechanic or idea that's being thrown in here. Like, I enjoy it.
Yeah, I really appreciated the coins, and I tried to get them where I could. And I say on average, I maybe got 3 out of 5 coins per level if you did an average across the whole game. And I think I unlocked 3 out of 4 of the bonus levels. And I didn't really go back. And yeah, I like also how you can get like custom hair and outfits. Yeah. And so you can just focus on buying the levels, but if not, you can then just spend your money on outfits and things. And is it the purple hair you always go for, or the green hair?
I actually went, so the very first shop, I bought the black hair and the yellow poncho, and I just stayed with that the whole game. I was like, oh, this looks really cool, actually. I like nice. The look of that character, so I just kind of kept that for the whole game.
Like the green hair and then the orange hair for a while, but yeah. Just stuff like that's really nice.
Yeah, it is. I was worried at the beginning, because I was like, oh, am I gonna, like, I didn't want to spend coins on outfits, because I was like, but I want to keep the coins so I can spend them on keys to unlock those levels. And by the end, I was like, oh, I have way more coins than I needed actually to unlock all those levels. So it worked out. But yeah, then I didn't really go back, because by that point in the game, I was like, I don't need to change what I look like. I'm happy with this.
Did you go into, it wasn't the menu, but there's one menu where you change your outfits, and then there's another menu next to that where it's so, I don't really understand. You could go into other levels and they were like level editors or something weird.
I didn't find that at all. I don't even know what it was.
I couldn't work it out, because you go into it.
So there's stickers you can buy as well in the game as part of the shop.
Yeah.
And I saw the creator online being like, oh, I loved Super Smash Brothers, and so these stickers are like my trophies, and you can...
Yeah, I liked the whole you stick money in a gachapon, right, and then you
yes
get this. I do quite like collectible stuff like that. Like, it's kind of fun, but yeah, I just couldn't work out what these levels were. I still have no idea, so I need to look that up, but it was very strange.
Yeah, I think he said something about like a stage that you can set dress essentially with stickers, so maybe that's what it was.
Okay, that makes sense.
Because I think...
Just to take like a screenshot, like something
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like, I think just like a fun, you know, cosmetic thing to like, if people want to engage with that or get 100%.
Everything on the level was all the descriptors were images and arrows and things. There was no like actual writing. Like, you had to work out. It was very strangely conveyed. So, yeah.
Well, curious. Yeah, I didn't really find any of that. But yeah, I think... There's a shortness and a sharpness to this game that I really appreciated. I do think, like, sometimes the checkpoints were a little bit far between, you know? It didn't get to the point of, like, super frustration, but there was moments of, like, this last thing you're asking me to do is the hardest part of this, and it just takes me so long to get back to
it. If the levels were as hard as the boss fights, I would have found that quite frustrating, but
I don't think they are.
They're not. I don't think this game, barring the boss fights, is that difficult. And even the boss fights, I got there in the end. But yeah, it is a real ideal length for what this game is going for sure. And it's not like we're coming to this game having played so many long platformers and come away from those games saying, oh, that game's so long. It's like they knew what the limit was in terms of fun when it came to this mechanic, and I think they absolutely nailed that, to be honest.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, there's fun ways of breaking the pace up, because I do think a game that is purely just grinding through the dirt, eventually you hit a point of diminishing returns with that mechanic, and you can do a lot of different fun things with it, but eventually you're gonna be like, okay, I need to do something else. And so I do understand why there are enemies in this game. I was gonna say, like, one of the things that I know you've talked about previously is like games that have bosses but not enemies, right?
Mm.
Like, and I think this is kind of a good example of that, where I think it almost would benefit from that in a way. But then, you know, it's fun to have those levels where you do have the gun arm instead, and you are just like basically just machine gunning people down. And sometimes that can get a little frustrating. The one elevator section I'm thinking of at the very end, where I'm like, oh my god, like, just you have to concentrate your fire in such a specific way in order to take down these enemies with the triangle helmets and stuff like that. But it's a nice pace breaker, at least, and it just kind of freshened things up a little bit. But I do think that this game almost is better without enemies, because like you were saying, there's a bit of a weird hitbox thing, and sometimes like I don't know where to jump on them from, and sometimes jumping from above doesn't quite work, and I get hit by an axe which is being held above their head, but the way they move the axe just doesn't allow for like, where am I actually gonna...
We're talking about very small like characters on screen here. Like, it's very difficult to animate that small number of pixels in a way where it's very clear where the hitbox is meant to be.
Right.
And we're not talking about like a Goomba and Mario jumping on a Goomba with a big hitbox, you know, like that's a very clear thing.
Sometimes I killed enemies and I didn't know how or why I had versus others.
Yeah, and that's never a good feeling.
Yeah, because sometimes like things would die in one hit, and sometimes things would take like three hits. And I was like, what's the consistent? There's no consistency here, which I think was a little confusing. But I don't know, do you think that's a correct take, that this game would be stronger if they kind of eschewed enemies from the equation and focused a bit more on just pure platforming?
I think from a purely mechanics, let's get from A to B and have a good time on purely mechanics, perhaps. But I do think the whole narwhal thing was just weird and zany, and definitely
adds character to the game, right?
Adds character, and that's kind of what Devolver are all about in many ways, is that kind of character. So I think on the whole, I'd rather they were in the game. But maybe I just wanted a couple of levels that really focused on mastering the main mechanic in a non-boss setting, where it's just like, right, you have to now weave through all of this and then pop out here and do this thing. And I maybe didn't feel that enough. And most of the difficulty was tied to dying to enemies in bad ways, which was like, oh, that didn't feel good. The levels where I was dying because I platformed incorrectly felt few and far between in comparison to, oh, I've been killed by that enemy again.
100%.
That's a little frustrating. I mean that aside to the bosses, which is separate.
There's just a bit of an inconsistency there sometimes, but there is fun in like the moments where you are jumping between things and you kill a flying enemy as you get from one spot to another, right? That's cool. And yeah, I always like, you know, a kind of gauntlet thing of like, okay, I'm circling around this circle as I wait for the kind of spinning spike ball to give me the right timing window to jump into that one. Like, so sense of satisfaction there that I enjoyed. But yeah, as much as I was collecting a lot of the gems early game and kept doing it when I died, by the end I was like, this just is not, it's just not worth it. It just doesn't make sense to like constantly try and do that when I'm just trying to speed run back to where I died initially. So yeah, eventually you reach a point of like, I just want to kind of get on with it. But yeah, I think it doesn't outstay its welcome. Like it has enough ideas in there. It's only four worlds, right? I think there's four different worlds, and each world has...
So often worlds, they have to be six or eight worlds, you know?
Yeah.
Like, that's so rare to have four worlds, which I think is quite nice.
And like 4 to 5 levels, depending on if you do the bonus one as well. I definitely felt like I kind of breezed through it in a way. Like I started it one evening and played like the first two worlds, and then the next evening I finished it basically. So it was a really, really easy game to jump into and just knock out, and just, you know, it was great. And also I played it pretty much majority handheld. I think the final boss I did on the big screen, just because the finickiness of it required a bigger controller for me. But yeah, for the most part, I was playing it handheld. And like, again, I think I said it last episode where I was ranting to myself, but I said, fucking, I do not for one second regret a single pound that I spent on that Switch OLED. Holy shit.
Well, Nintendo have saved you. They've delayed the Switch too.
Yeah, exactly. So. I'm honestly, I'm thankful. I'm thankful that they didn't make me waste my money. But like, man, like I could never go back to an original Switch. Holy
shit.
They're going to make you. Well, okay, so here's the thing. The original Switch, the actual other drawback of it is how small the screen is. Like, the real estate that you lose going back to an original Switch, it's actually massive. Like, the amount to which the OLED fills the entire frame is like, oh my God, like I was missing this my whole life, you know? As soon as you see it, like you feel like a changed person, honestly. Like I know this has been said a lot, and I think I just didn't believe people when they were like, oh my God, it feels like a real upgrade. Like, I cannot express enough to people how much fucking better the OLED is than the original Switch, especially for someone like me who mainly plays handheld. It's just such a beautiful upgrade, and yeah, I'm very glad. I don't regret that purchase, because a game like Pepper Grinder, so colorful and bright and has such a vibe to it, it just pops beautifully on that screen. So it's just a lovely thing to sit down, have a podcast on my computer, and be playing Pepper Grinder as I just kind of go through the evening. So yes, it was lovely. I really enjoyed it a lot, and you know, has its flaws, and I think, you know, ultimately doesn't go up there in the pantheon of the great platformers, but it's enjoyable, it's good fun time, and I definitely recommend people check it out. And not too expensive either, right? It's like £13 on the eShop, yeah. Right,
which is
a good price, I think, for a platformer. Good stuff. Any final thoughts, Bally, on Pepper Grinder before we move on?
I had the sound cut out on the final boss.
Oh, okay.
It was on the second phase, so there's a checkpoint after the first phase.
I forgot to mention, it is a little buggy. So the third boss in the... You know the person who's like the same size as you?
Yes.
That boss, my character got stuck in the ground, but I could still move the drill around on its own. So I beat that. I didn't actually fight that boss. I basically just beat them without being able to move my character. So my character didn't take any damage, and I just chased them with the drill until they died and didn't have to dodge anything, or I didn't actually have to engage with that boss at all. Also happened with the final boss on the first phase, where he just froze in place.
I got that. Yeah.
And I just killed him, and then it moved on to the second phase. I was like, oh, okay,
yeah,
cool, I guess so.
I got that, but then he froze, and then I went through him, and he killed me instantly. It was weird, even though he froze.
That is weird. Yeah. So yeah, it is a bit buggy. Again, it's only just launched, so I'm sure it's going to have those bugs.
But yeah, very small issues, and I had a great time. I was really busy with Caroline's mum visiting, so it was really not having much time to game at all, and this was just such a nice game to just play a level before bed. It'll take like 10 minutes. Let's just play a level and then play another level when I wake up in the morning.
Did you pick it up for handheld at all, or are you still just full lock on a TV for playing stuff at the moment?
I played it all handheld barring like three
levels.
Wow. Yeah. But that was just the nature with having visitors, so.
Yeah.
I
would have
played it all at the TV had we not had visitors, but yeah. So it was just a nice little thing at the end of the day.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. So, yeah, I think it also just says, you know, how high the bar is for this type of game for us at this point. You know, like, you really have to be like peak of the mountain to do well in this genre space. And it's tough. But yeah,
what was the other Devolver one that came out last year? Gunbrella,
which we never got around to.
Never got around to it, but I feel like it got an identical Open Critic score. It's like high 70s or something. So that's another one I want to try.
Right. So it feels like a similar thing where, you know, they're publishing these games that I think back, you know, a few years ago, they would have got way more attention than they get now. But because of how saturated everything has become and how many games there are and how many quality games there are, I think stuff like this, where it's like, yeah, it's probably like an 8 out of 10. I think a lot of people look at that nowadays and they go, I don't have time for that, you know?
Yeah.
It has to be a Celeste. It has to be a Hades. It has to be something that everyone is obsessed with. That it's like, well, I've got to drop everything to check this out in order to make that punch through.
And yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's just not up to that bar. So, which, you know, most things aren't.
Another platformer getting a very similar score is Penny's Big Breakaway, which is
exactly.
I'd love to try, but again, I think the game's like 9 hours long, so right. 8 hours maybe. So
yeah,
you know, it's quite a big time commitment in comparison. But I'd like to try that again as well this year at some point. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, right? It's like finding the time to wrap back around to some of these games that, like, they scored okay and we were kind of interested in them, but, like, you know, to get to that thing, there's so many 10 out of 10s that you still have, you know, to check out beforehand.
You kind of have to do the deep dive on that genre. Like, we really like 2D platformers, so that maybe, like, we will play these at some point. It's just a question of when. But as you say, there's those of 10 out of 10s, like Balatro and Final Fantasy.
Final Fantasy, definitely a 10 out of 10 video game.
Not many highly rated games this year, to be honest. Like,
no.
There were a lot in January, February, but it's gone a little quieter, so we'll see what the rest of the year is like.
Yeah, I think it's a good year to catch up on stuff, right? Definitely, it feels like it is. So
it's my catch up on the Elden Ring year. That's
oh boy, God, that DLC is actually. I was going to say, like, man, we've got loads of time to play stuff, but fucking Elden Ring DLC will probably take 3 months off my life. So we'll see how that goes. That's the main thing I've been playing. I've been dipping into some other things here and there. But Bally, you, on your streak of trying to have a goatee to coatee list that isn't anemic this year, for some classic games that you have not gotten around to yet.
Yeah, I've beaten Limbo by Playdead, so it came out way back in 2010, which is wild.
I believe I played Limbo on the PlayStation 3 through PS Plus, maybe like a year after it came out, I want
to
say.
So yeah, it came to like Switch in 2018, I want to say, and I played this like half of it on the plane to Barcelona, and then the other half on the plane back from Barcelona, and then I had like six levels left that turned out to be incredibly difficult, and definitely needed a guide for those final six levels. But I think I had a really good time with this game. You know, people know my thoughts on Inside. I didn't like the ending of Inside. And for other reasons, I didn't really like the ending of Limbo, I guess. Yeah. So Inside, it was more narrative and the themes. I didn't love the ending. And this game, I think the difficulty just went bananas in the final kind of six puzzles.
Remember that last puzzle and being like, I would never in my fucking life do this myself, you know?
There's definitely a few I looked up and definitely came away with the same thought. Like, I would never have got this.
I had like a YouTube video being like, okay, what's the angle here and how do I do this weird upside down thing, and like finished it, but I think by the end it left a bit of a sour taste in my mouth that point. So
but I will say, I do think overall the puzzles are really good. They're really strong. They are strong. I will stand back and say they are stronger than a game like Planet of Lana. Like, I still love that game probably a lot more than Limbo, and I think that speaks to how I'm a sucker for presentation,
aesthetic
theming.
Is big for you, right?
Yeah. Pardon?
Aesthetic is aesthetic, a big factor, right?
The trees, can't forget about those trees. Planet of Lana, and I prefer that to, you know, dark, creepy worlds with spiders and limbs that you tear off. And mechanically the puzzles are superior, but I really like the kind of the suggestive plot of Planet of Lana and this kind of thing. Like, that just kind of works better for me. Equally, Cocoon was just like not really narrative at all, but that was a game that was so mechanically pure and strong that just, I am still a sucker for amazing mechanics when they're done in a way that I like, which is what I'd say about Cocoon. But
Cocoon is also like aesthetically exceptional right? So there's that
perfect
level too.
It's perfection. But Limbo is just kind of really gruesome and like dark, and I don't mind that. I would have come away from this so much more positively had the ending just been a little bit easier. And it makes me go ahead.
No, I was just interested, like, I wonder how much that aesthetic question would have changed had you played this at the time it came out, because I think back then, like, that whole black and white, kind of that stark monochromatic style was not, like, it hadn't been done to death, you know? Like, at this point, every video game, Mario Wonder included, has done, like, monochromatic levels where you're dark and the background is light. And, like, it was a very striking, bold visual identity at the time. I think for me, it's something that kind of stood out. I was like, wow, this is super unique looking. I think carried a lot of my experience with that game because, you know, I think, like you're about to say, the kind of the puzzle element of it eventually got to a point of frustration with me where I was like, I'm just ready to be done with this. And I didn't enjoy the final part of it. But there is a lot of good leading up to that, right?
Definitely.
There's a lot of really good, cool, interesting puzzles that play with the visuals in that way. Like I think of the spider leg at the beginning, right? Like it's a
really
very distinctive thing that you remember that sticks in the brain because of just the way it looks and the way that it is framed.
And the sound design and like it's...
Yes.
Gory and and yeah, the art style, as you say, like this black and white thing has been done to death, and
Donkey Kong, right? The Tropical Freeze and Returns.
So as a result, probably from all these different games, it didn't really do anything for me. Like the cool stuff is the level design and the spiders, like we were saying, and I was really proud of the fact that I played so much of this game on a plane, because on a plane you do not have internet. You cannot look up solutions.
Right,
so
yeah, oh God.
I like got all the way to the final, there's like chapters in this game. It was like, I don't know, 30, maybe 35 chapters. I did all the chapters barring 6, I'd say, without looking at a guide by doing them on a plane. And it makes me wonder, who was this game aimed at difficulty-wise? Because if you're someone who would be able to get those final 6 puzzles without a guide, I can't help but think you'd find the majority difficulty, the difficulty for the majority of the puzzles, just very boring and very easy. Now, maybe lots of people love it that easy, but I found most of those fairly challenging and interesting and satisfying to accomplish. But then, as a result, I found those final 6 levels just way too hard. So I'm interested, like, what was the median gamer's experience of getting through this game and using guides or not? Because it gets really hard. But at the same time, I think those first few puzzles are really not overly straightforward, but they're very solvable and very satisfying to just kind of explore your way through and get to. So it was weird.
I think people were also more patient back in 2010 as well, right? Which it's been a long time since this game came out. And, you know, this was one of the first major, like, indie hits of its time. And so feel like there was... I feel like a lot of that stuff probably got brushed under the rug, right? Like the way that it spikes in difficulty at the end and all that sort of stuff. I feel like today we would have criticized that a lot more than was thought of at the time in terms of when it came, because, you know, when Limbo came out, it was getting 9s and 10s across the board from everybody. Mm. And I think, you know, rightly so for the era and the time and place in which it came out.
Definitely.
But yeah, I think you know, the subsequent stuff that's come from the minds behind this game has just been stronger and stronger, right? Like, I do think Inside is close to a perfect game. I think mechanically it's so superior to Limbo. And
oh, really?
The puzzles, I think the puzzles in Inside are just phenomenally good. And I also just love the ending. Like, we're very on opposite spectrums of that, of like, just I love the bizarreness of it. And there's a beautiful kind of like singularity to the vision of it. But I do think Cocoon's a better game as well. I think like every game has improved from that point, and they've got to this point now where, like, obviously Jeppe Carlsson and his team, separate to Playdead with Cocoon, has made an experience that is so perfectly balanced on that puzzle level to where there is no chafing at all, right? And you just don't feel any of those hard edges, which I think Limbo still displays a lot of those hard edges, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I definitely think, other than those 6 puzzles at the end, I did find the puzzles kind of in line with Inside, to be honest. Like, I'm probably probably different to you on that area. But I do think Inside is a very slick... It is slicker. I'll give you that. Like, it is slicker than Limbo. And I actually really like the way Limbo ends. I was like, okay, right.
Right, yeah,
and then
yeah.
We're doing this, okay, right,
yeah.
So that I found that really interesting, but glad to have played it. A very good Dakoti game to play, add to the list, and it should feature.
How do you feel about the child death in this game? Like, oh, God, I feel like there was a conversation back in the early 2010s about, you know, Tomb Raider 2013 came out. And there was a lot of conversation of like the brutal ways in which you see Lara die, and I feel like Limbo got brought up a lot in that conversation of like, this kid, and like they're just falling on spikes and being like, you know, skewered in like horrible ways to die just constantly throughout this game. I feel like it's something that was a conversation back then, but I don't know if it even sticks out now because like there's been so much of that kind of chatter around and it's kind of moved on in that way.
It fits in well for the game, I'd say. Like it's going for a very dark vibe, and what's more dark than killing children on spikes? I get what it's going for. I think it works perfectly for what it's going for. Does it mean it's aesthetically my perfect game? Absolutely not. Like I'm not into all that, of course, but yes. You can handle it because it is that black and white thing. It's not
there's
like
a remove
a
to it, right?
Game, yeah. Right, it works. I think if I thought this game was mechanically perfect, arguably there might be aspects of the aesthetic that might hold it back in my mind, and that's where Planet of Lana is just the complete opposite, where the aesthetic, the music, the vibes, the trees are just top tier for me that I just love. Having said all this, I don't think even Planet of Lana made my top 10 last year, but obviously Cocoon did. It's not all about aesthetic, but arguably when a game is as dark and gruesome as Limbo can be, there's aspects of that that make me feel a bit a bit turned off. But I still had a really good time, and my main takeaway is I really respect the hell out of these mechanics for a game from 2010. Like, this is really, really impressive. I thought this game came out in like 2015 or something. The fact that it was 2010 really blew my mind when I looked it up.
Yeah, I think Limbo was 2016, I want to say. Inside was 2016. Same year as Uncharted 4, I want to say. I remember I played Inside in a single sitting in an evening. It wasn't actually a single sitting. I played it, then I had dinner, then I finished it after dinner. Yeah, of course. but I it was just so singular. And I do remember Limbo taking me a few more sessions of, like, you know, trying to get to grips with it. But because I think I played Limbo a little after when it came out, I got a little more frustrated, I think, with some of those elements that you identified, right?
Totally.
Which makes sense.
Totally.
Well, that's great. It's another one ticked off the list, which is good. What's left on the list, Bal? I know you have Inscription on there. One that you want to hit up.
Let me check my list.
I think there's still just a few of those kind of indie classics. You've covered a lot of them, but there's still...
These are the games that I had a list on Deku Deals. I made a list of, like, these are indie games that have come out in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years that I need to get to, that I'll just put them all on the list, and then when they go on sale, I'll just buy them. So that included Cult of the Lamb. I talked about that. I got a little Gator game coming up. Unfortunately, that game came to Game Pass. So
yeah, I was going to message you being like, whoops, you went a bit too early.
Equally, I'll benefit from a bit of handheld gaming in my bed on the Switch. So that's fine. Inscription was on sale. I now own that on PS5.
Oh, that's nice. Okay.
I'll play that soonish.
Oh, gosh.
The Messenger. I obviously loved Sea of Stars earlier this year. I'm really intrigued.
I'm super interested how you can't do that, because you're playing it post Sea of Stars, which is kind of the reverse of a lot of people.
So I kind of know all the story stuff it links to already, which is interesting. I've got that on Xbox waiting for me, and then obviously stuff like Danganronpa I'm going to play for game trade,
because you have to. Yes.
But the two big ones I'm looking out for to go on sale, and I would love to get to this year, are Dredge, A Highland Song, because Scotland, and Dave the Diver. I really want to get to those three games. Probably play them all on Switch, although I know Dave the Diver doesn't run the best on Switch, and it's about to come out on PS5.
Yeah, probably best to wait for those ports to come, I think.
And something I've noticed in my monitoring sales era, as we call it, is games are generally just a couple of quid cheaper on PS5, and I don't really know why.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it?
A lot of them are. So that's why I bought Cult of the Lamb on PS5. That's why I got Inscription on PS5. Like, when these games go on sale, they're just a couple of quid cheaper than the other platforms. So there's definitely some sort of weird Xbox Switch tax going on a little bit.
Yeah, so there's definitely a Switch tax, 100% a Switch tax for a lot of games, because Pepper Grinder was more expensive on Switch than it was on Steam. But it wasn't too bad for me, because obviously I think the nice benefit of Switch is fucking points, baby. You just get points. I never spend full price for a game on Switch, because I always have some points from something, you know.
It's like a permanent 5% off, isn't it?
Yeah, which, like, I hope they don't fucking get rid of that for the next console, man. It's so good. Like, it's a real... I think it's a real incentive, honestly, for buying games on Switch. I think it's saved me... It's probably saved me, like, £200 over the years. I wouldn't be surprised if it's mm-hmm. that high, mm-hmm. you know? Like, it's a lot of money being saved through that. So, hopefully they...
I've also been playing a bit of Mario Golf on the Game Boy Color.
Oh, I'll nice, okay.
get to that another time. Sweet. So, yeah. Good times, good times. Those are my gaming plans for the coming months.
Yeah, I did. I mentioned it on the the vlog, not audio log that I did. But I did play a bunch of Eastward Octopia on the plane over to GDC, which I felt like I got a bit more of a groove with that. But I want to finish that off, and then I'll come back and talk about it. I think on the show once I'm done with it, and I can talk to the whole of it. But I think I've made a good dent now, so I'm probably getting close to hopefully wrapping that up at some point. But that's on my calendar. And then I don't know if either of you are going to play Princess Peach Showtime. I have this voucher that I've got to use before May the 3rd or whatever it is. When did Tears of the Kingdom come out last year?
Tales of K'Zara Zhao coming out April 23rd, and I am super interested how that scores.
Yeah, definitely.
Janet Ochoa at Giant Bomb said it felt better than Prince of Persia to jump.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I played the demo on Steam Deck, and obviously the Steam Deck demo didn't run very well, so I didn't play it for that long, but I definitely disagree with that take. we'll see.
Few games feel as good as Prince of Persia.
Yeah, it's pretty slick. It's pretty slick stuff. We'll see some stuff on the horizon, and we'll be jumping into it. But we are going to take a break right now, and we'll come back after that with some of your emails. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back.
Everyone, and welcome back to the second segment of today's show. It is that time again. It is emails. I must say, there are two ways of contacting the show. Two. First way, email us. The email address is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. The second way, we have a Discord server. Join the community. Have fun. We've got a great community growing over there. There is a channel. It is called Emails. You can post a comment, a question, an email in that channel. That is the second method of contacting us. You can join the Discord server. There's a link in the description of this show. Join it. You'll love it. We love to see it. Don't you love it, MBZ?
Very methodical approach to the emails this week.
It's just straight to the point. It's like, here, this is how you do it.
An instruction video. How does one talk to us through internet? Here you go. Bally presenting it to us. Lovely. Good stuff.
Our first email is from Discord. It's Hawksbill_JB says, with the news of Crazy Taxi being a AAA game, it got me thinking this should be a free-to-play live service game with skins for your taxi and driver, knockout-style gameplay, etc. You could even have squads where one guy is the taxi driver and the teammates are passengers that have to help their driver or hinder the opposition. What franchises do you think could benefit from the dreaded live service tag?
Hmm, interesting. I like the flip on the idea of like, what's a positive thing we can say about live service games? Yeah, it's really interesting that that Sega stuff, right? Because they was it the Game Awards where they basically it was the Game Awards because I was fucking sitting there and I was like, I was having a fever dream. I was like, are they announced the fucking Dreamcast 2? Like I was legit like a Sega announcing a fucking console.
It's like a weird quick highlight reel. It went way too fast.
Yeah. So they showed like basically nothing of like seven games or whatever it was. One of them being Crazy Taxi. One of them being Shinobi, which actually looked sick. Like it was like a 2D animated take on Shinobi. And I was like, oh, that actually seems like it could be quite good. That's the one I'm probably the most excited for from those. But Crazy Taxi is interesting. I don't have much of a history with it aside from the Yakuza games, which basically rip it off and make it into a mini game inside their own game. But there was a Crazy Taxi Simpson, I think it was Road Rage or Crazy Taxi.
Oh, yeah. It was one of my most played games on GameCube was Simpsons Road Rage. Yeah, that game is really cool. I played way too much of it. Can you make it live service? Yeah, like
I think Crazy Taxi is like one of those interesting franchises where it worked in the PS2 GameCube era because of the simplicity of it. I feel like bringing back Crazy Taxi these days, like how do you do that? Because it is so arcadey, right, in its very nature and
very arcadey.
Like how do you give it, you know? How do you get XP when you do crazy? Like you almost have to modernize it in a way that makes sense. And so I kind of understand this approach that Hawksbill's talking about is like, well, if you live service it, but then like, how does that work?
I think the way it works is the dropout idea that they've suggested where, because you have multiplayer in Crazy Taxi or Simpsons Road Rage, and it's basically you're racing each other to pick up passengers and drop them off. However, if you say you have, I don't know, 20 taxis and there's 19 passengers, it's a bit like musical chairs. And then someone gets knocked out and you just keep going. Like that could be pretty cool where you have like 19 passengers, therefore one person doesn't pick up a passenger and is knocked out of the game.
Battle Royale approach, exactly.
Yeah. And the fun thing about Crazy Taxi or Simpsons Road Rage is you can steal the passenger of an opposition car by bumping into them. That's like how you did it. On top of the fact, in Simpsons Road Rage, your car would drive more slowly when you had a passenger than when you did not have a passenger. I would play this quite a lot at Christmas and New Year with my cousins, and we'd always work out like, how do you keep catching me? It's like, oh, because I don't have a passenger, and all the cars are the same speed, but then when one doesn't have a passenger, they all catch up. Okay. There's mechanics you can do that I think could work well in some sort of battle royale format like that, but who knows?
Yeah. I think like if we think about Nintendo's franchises, I think a lot of people are like, but can you do a proper job at live service though? Because I think there's this weird...
There is a game. It's called F-Zero 99. It's fantastic.
But are they doing a proper live service job? Right. And I guess we have to define like what is proper live service, because I think it's a really interesting conversation that's been happening recently around Helldivers 2, where, you know, like the whole ethos of that game is there's a surprise to the live service element of it. Like they don't tell people that stuff is changing.
You just get sniped by a new race out of nowhere and everyone's like, where did that come from?
Oh, right. Like they put out an update, but they don't give patch notes of what's in the update.
Awesome.
You know, like it's such a smart way of handling it where like, the feeling of something evolving and you discovering that evolution is, it just feels like so much. It honestly, to me, like when we think about the way in which Breath of the Wild broke open world convention, like I feel like Helldivers is kind of breaking live service convention in like, this is what live service should have always been. And this is what it, they're kind of redefining what it can be. Right.
Like imagine that Last of Us thing did happen, factions. And you're just with like a squad, you're taking on some zombies, and then like a brand new faction appears out of nowhere from some other city, or a brand new a race of zombies that just suddenly gets, you know, like...
And like only a few players see it initially, and then people are like, what the fuck are you talking about, you know? It's like, such a cool concept.
But you do that in a zombie apocalypse world, like... This does feel like an evolution. Like, we've done the whole alien invasion thing. That's awesome. Helldivers 2 sounds like it's doing it incredibly well. But yeah, like, what about zombies? What about racing? What about all these other genres that could be live action, like free to play, like live service. Like it's the possibilities are endless, and yeah, I think it'd be interesting how that evolves in years to come and just quite how far behind the curve Nintendo actually are.
Yeah, like because they have such open goals ready, right? Like I think Animal Crossing is such an obvious example of like, okay, like they didn't really live service it. They had
the support was so minimal.
They had 1 year of things, but like the things were things that in a previous Animal Crossing game are just part of the year, you know, like
yeah,
it's a Christmas event. Well, yeah, that's Animal Crossing. There's always Christmas stuff that happens around Christmas because it's a calendar system, you know. So I think
there was some negative ones where people were like, if I yeah. pick up one goddamn more egg, I'm gonna lose
the fucking egg festival. Everyone was mad about the egg festival because it was the one where most people were playing the game,
yes,
right?
Exactly.
And so there was a lot of frustration around it. And yeah, there is just so many easy wins you can have for Animal Crossing when it comes to, you know, furniture that gets sold or just new items and new villages and new bits of story that you can drip through those. Like, I feel like there's such possibility space for that idea, for that world. Like, almost makes me wonder if, like, EA's approach with the next Sims game is going to change in that sense, if they want to have something of that vibe. I know Sims is quite different from Animal Crossing, but, like, I don't know. There's something you could do with a more connected, more online version of that where, you know, parts of your city talk to another city and how it interacts, I think could be quite cool. So, So for me, I think Animal Crossing could really benefit from the live service tag because at the end of the day, what we currently have is a game that is static where every year the events are just repeats of what they already are. There's a limited content pool of what people can say to you and what things you can buy. And by making it endless, by opening it up to the live service model, it allows you to create that evolving sense of a community and of things happening and of new stuff being added. Like, people already play Animal Crossing a lot, but I think they would be so much more engaged and interested. And like, Nintendo like money. They can make so much fucking money from like live servicing Animal Crossing in a smart way, in an ethical way, but in a way that rewards you for continuing to play it, right?
Yeah.
I think it's the obvious one for me.
Totally. I think they've also dropped the ball a little bit with games like Splatoon. Like,
yes, yeah.
Mechanically, Splatoon is an incredible multiplayer shooter game that just doesn't feel like it gets the active. And when we say like active, it is that difference between Nintendo's methodical plodding. Here's an event we're all going to get excited for in a month's time versus Helldivers 2. There's this new alien race attacked us out of nowhere. And this is so sudden and surprising and interesting and exciting. Like, there's just such a gulf in the nature of how the live service game is changing and evolving. And, you know, say Splatoon 4 launches in the first couple of years of Switch 2. You can kind of predict what it's going to be, right?
Like, oh, yeah.
It's a bit depressing.
They'll just follow the same playbook, which is like, we'll have Splatfests every 3 months or 2 months or whatever it is. And
ketchup versus mayonnaise.
Oh, whoa, what a fun choice. Which, you know, we shouldn't mock it because back in the day, Bally, the fucking Everybody Votes channel. I mean, come on.
Is there
a better channel on the Wii? No. Is there a better channel on any television? No. The Everybody Votes channel, the greatest of all time. But yeah, it is. I mean, you know, Splatoon, Animal Crossing, I think they both fall into a category of Nintendo games, which is, this makes a lot of money, we're not going to change it, category. And, you know, I think that it kind of sucks because there is a lot of potential in the same way for Animal Crossing, for Splatoon, to have it evolve and just be supported more consistently and more interestingly, right? Like, what if, like, the updates for Splatoon were just a bit more significant in terms of what they added, in terms of, like, brand new game modes or things like that?
Yeah,
like, things that would get me back to the game that I currently, you know, I think, you know, we have just a problem where we just don't go back to stuff anyway. So even if they did that, it'd probably be hard. But at least I would think about it. At least I consider it more. Whereas, like, today, I'm like, oh, I want to play some Splatoon. Oh, I'm just playing some more Turf War and I'm playing some more of this and that. And, you know, it's kind of the same as I did last time. And it's still enjoyable, but it's not... not a new reason to come back to the game. And I think new reasons to come back to things are the thing that Nintendo are lacking, I think, in a lot of their franchises and their approach to multiplayer generally, right?
I think one game that has made me desire another game even more is playing Fall Guys has made me want to see a Nintendo take on that. And the Nintendo take I think that would work the best is a multiplayer Mario platforming game.
Now, 3D Mario platforming.
3D Mario platforming. Mario 99, right?
Here we
Where you have like 99 Marios in a world and you see a flagpole off in the open world distance.
Oh, Bally, yes.
Get set, go. Give it the control set of like Mario Odyssey and let's just have some crazy ass buildings and shapes and things to climb and platform. And let's give real rewards to everyone in, say, the top 30. Like, every single jump matters. Even if you're in 99, you can still make it to the top 30 and make this a mode as part of, say, Mario Odyssey 2 or whatever is next. Who knows? But, like, and support it. Give new levels. Give costumes. Give other unlockables and really invest in like making it interesting. Like we just said about Helldivers 2, like this random alien races come out of nowhere and attacked. Have something live in the world that suddenly does something. Like a massive giant Mecha Bowser. Who cares? Uh-huh. Something like that. Or like what if you've got some underwater level and no one's ever seen it before and the massive Mario 64 eel just comes out of nowhere. Just like interesting things like that that are just still taking something for what Nintendo is famous for and the best at, which is, in our opinion, 3D platforming.
Yes.
And taking an idea like Fall Guys, but putting a Nintendo polish on it, giving it more energy and support it in a real meaningful way.
Yeah, no, I love that idea. I think it makes so much sense. And for that reason, they are never going to do it.
Because they had like the weird Luigi balloon thing.
Yeah.
Which was basically this idea on the smallest, most crap scale possible.
It was just the shittiest version of any of this, yeah.
So I don't know.
Yeah. No, I like that a lot, and I think that, you know, there's a way in which live service is, it's just detrimental, I think, sometimes to the people who work on those games. Yeah, because
that's the Mario team sorted for the next 3-4 years, never to work on anything else.
Right, you know, like, and that's part of the reason why Naughty Dog decided, we're not going to do this thing, because it takes up so much time.
It's funny how it took them so long to work that out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, wait a minute, how are we going to make the next Naughty Dog game? Oh,
right, if we're making this game for 10 years instead, it's why stuff like, I think there's also just unreasonable expectations from players because of games like Fortnite, where Epic has so much money and time and resources to actually, that, you know, you think they would, but they're fucking cutting jobs like left, right, and center. But, you know, like the frequency with which they change that game is, it's almost unfair to everything else in the market. Like, it's just such a rapid pace. Like, it's built for the TikTok generation. It's built for people's attention spans disappearing off the planet with how fast you can change things, or they change things within Fortnite. And, you know, you see this complaint from communities of like, oh, Halo, what's going on? Why is it taking so long for all this stuff? And they're just not built in the same way that Epic has built their Fortnite team to just be on top of it 24/7, just constantly updating non-stop, new thing, new skin, new map being changed. It's just, it's a little bit breathless. Yeah, exactly. It's not healthy for other games to try and do that. But because they have set an expectation, they've set a bar, everyone else has to try and meet that bar. No one can. So yeah, it's kind of sucks, I think, in that way. My hope is that we get a live service Xenoblade game that never ends, so that I always have big giant gods to explore.
It's an MMO, it feels like worst genre possible.
If they made a Xenoblade MMO, I'm sorry, I just wouldn't play other video games. I think I would just, I would become a full-time Xenoblade MMO player. So that's
the,
it, that'd be my
end there. And
it would, it would be over. I'm sorry, guys, just like, unless you want to just hear me talk about a fucking Xenoblade MMO every week, that's it, that's my life. So yeah.
But yeah, great question, Hawksbill. Hopefully we shone some light on the possibilities the nightmares, where you want to take it.
Sure.
Our next email is from George B., who's from New York, and they made clear it's the western part of the state and not the city. I'm George, and I'm 14 years old. I'm a very new listener. I found the show after the first episode in December, but I was hooked. A couple of weeks ago, I decided to watch the backlog of the show, and I am on episode 33 now. I listen while playing games and washing the dishes. Great jobs. Love a bit of dishwashing and listening to pods. I have a question. Wouldn't it be better for the next Nintendo console not to be a Switch successor? I feel that it makes more sense for Nintendo to remain innovative. I would feel that we would be stuck with another 7 years of no innovation in hardware from Nintendo. I don't think the Switch 2 could sell more than 60 to 80 million units because not everyone will be willing to upgrade. Shouldn't the goal be to match or surpass the Switch's success? I think it could be cool to go back to having a console and a handheld, but in the sense that the handheld would be a Switch 2. However, I do understand that this may not be a logical step for Nintendo, but I would love to see it. I also play my Switch almost always in docked mode, but often play older consoles instead of the Switch. As a physical collector of retro and modern games, I still appreciate the idea of virtual console, but I do not appreciate the idea of a subscription service. I would much rather buy the games for a fixed cost and then still be able to play them when the service inevitably discontinues. For me, a perfect system would be a connected collection of virtual console across the console and the Switch, as well as the ability to buy the games outright or a subscription. I think it would be great to manually customize which games you are buying the service for, and the price would go down by a few cents when you remove a game. What are your thoughts? Thank you for the hundreds of hours of content to listen to. You guys are great. Also, I am sorry for the loss of your Bluetooth speaker, MBZ.
Appreciate it. We held a wake for the speaker. Just, sang some songs, sent it off into the night. I have to say, the new speaker that I have... remarkably similar. It is wider. Okay. It is bulkier. It is wider. It is like a little more annoying to carry around.
It's mad how quickly, and I've noticed this with moving house, how mm-hmm. quickly you fall into a new routine.
Yeah.
And yep. before the routine is fallen into, it is the worst thing imaginable. But when
yes.
and the transition is not that much fun. But
no.
then once you're in it, it's like, oh, okay, this wasn't so bad.
Yeah, and there's like weird benefits to it, right? So like previously when I was waking up in the morning and I turned on a podcast, I would have to like slightly open my eyes and press the play button on my podcast to start it, because the only way to, or I would have to get my speaker and tap the top of it, which in the morning you don't want to do a big motion like tapping the top because you're still tired trying to wake up to like get it to play.
And then you talk to it.
No, I did. So, Bally, at one point in time, I was asking Google to play my podcast in the morning. And it worked. It worked beautifully.
I remember we were at Gamescom or something. I can't remember mm-hmm. where we were at, but you were just like, Google, play my podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Like... Yeah. And it works. It worked for me. But here's the benefit of the new speaker. It has a button on the top that's just a play button. And so when I wake up in the morning, I turn it on, and all I have to do is one little finger, click, and it starts playing. And I'm like, oh, my life is so much better.
That's nice that it's a button. Buttons are a dying breed.
Yeah, I know, right? So I'm very thankful that it's there. The problem is, like, you know, like with the last speaker, because it's a button, it means inevitably I'll press it 7 million times, and it will in 10 years break down in the same way.
How often do you press the play button for a podcast?
I know. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But for now, like, I can like still be in my state of half awakeness and press it, and like, oh my god, the joy that it gives me, it's immeasurable, frankly. So that's good. Also, I just want to say, George, for a 14-year-old, far more switched on,
yeah,
I think, than
no,
we were.
Like,
14
this is a
years
great
old.
Take. I think yes. George makes some really, really valid points. Because ultimately, like, Nintendo are the master innovators.
Of course.
For whoever is designing the next console... Let's assume it is the Switch 2, and it's fairly in line with the rumors, mm-hmm. and it's fairly in line with what the Switch does. You can tell that for a Nintendo console designer, that'll be the most painful, frustrating, un-Nintendo thing to be making a successor that is so close to the original. And don't get me wrong, they have done successors that are very similar to the original Game Boy to Game Boy Advance, NES to Super Nintendo. There are examples in history, but they are few and far between, and I see the logic of you can never beat 60 to 80 million units with the same unit because not mm-hmm. everyone is going to want to upgrade. Therefore, you need to diversify.
Right.
And that means everyone will want it. I get that logic.
Yes. I mean, the proof is in the pudding because every console that has been a sequel to a successful console from Nintendo has sold worse than the previous one, right? The 3DS did worse than the DS did. The Super Nintendo did worse than the NES. The Wii U did significantly worse than the Wii did. Every time they have a hit console and they do a follow-up, it always goes poorly. It always is worse.
Or it goes well, but not as well.
Exactly, yes. And the Super Nintendo is a good example of that, of like, yeah, it did good, but it didn't do as well as the NES did. And it was a downward trajectory from that point. So yeah, it's a really good point, because I think, you know, we talk about it all the time. Majority of people who own Switches are casual people who don't understand graphics or frame rate or anything. They like Mario, and they like Mario Kart, and they play it with their kids. And for those people, there is no reason to upgrade to a Switch 2. And if it's the same thing with no differentiator, there's no reason. They just keep it. They just keep their first one, and they're like, this is great. I'll keep playing this for 10 more years, you know? And so that does lead to a shrinking market, which there is, you know, I think that's what people have been saying about the games industry, is like, there are not a lot of new players being created in the games industry. It's a lot of the same people buying it again and again, buying consoles.
And these same people only have a finite of hours to play games in.
Yeah, exactly. And so I think Nintendo did chart new territory with Switch and have brought on new audiences with it, which is cool. And obviously they're a games funneling, like, they create new players more so than any of the other platforms, right? Like, kids usually have a Nintendo console. If they're going to get into any console as a kid, you're going to have a Nintendo console, most likely. If you don't, you have a fucking iPad, right? And that's what you play stuff on. So they are really the funnel into the industry. And so people come on board with Nintendo, and maybe they then get to the age of, you know, 11, and they're like, oh, that PlayStation's cool because it has blood. But yeah, they build an ecosystem in a way. And so, yeah, having something that is so similar, I think, for a kid is less interesting. Because I think if we think about us as kids playing Nintendo games, like, I was so excited for the Wii because of how different and weird it was, right? And I was so excited for the DS of, like, two screens. Like, every time they did something, it was like, oh, I've got to get that because it's just so, like, I've got to try the 3D.
We drank the innovator Kool-Aid hard.
Yeah. Like, oh, very hard.
It worked for us.
And I think that is what kids want. Kids want fun, weird stuff, right?
Like, yeah. I'm so jealous of friends with PS2s with the iToy. I was like, that's a Nintendo invention.
Exactly.
Look at that shit. Like, it's definitely got Nintendo energy. Yeah, we just loved to innovate. It was great.
Yeah, totally. So I think, yeah, there's some valid thoughts here. I think the idea, though, that Nintendo are just going to make a Switch 2, let me tell you, that shit ain't happening. Look, we talked about it before. They're going to find some fucking way to make this weird. And you all know it. You all know it. We all sit here and are like, oh, this will be a Switch 2. No, it fucking won't. No, it won't.
It can be both at the same time.
It can,
like,
exactly.
The 3DS.
And I think that's what is the most likely scenario here, is like, it's going to be a Switch 2, but then there's going to be something and everyone's going to groan. Everyone's going to go, oh, of course.
But the,
you know,
the inner child in us, MBZ, will be rejoicing. And we will
every time. And I love that. And that is why Nintendo, for me, are still the most interesting company to follow in the games industry. It's the company I care the most about and will continue to, I think, for the rest of my life, because they have this just inability to stick to the straight and narrow path. They just want to go and just do some fucking weird shit. And I love it. Like, I really do. I think it is just so interesting. And especially because their competition are just so fucking boring, right? Like, okay, yes. Cool. It's a better graphics card. Like,
yeah,
great.
The
thanks,
games,
guys.
The shooters.
Yeah, like, there is just... Games. There's no innovation from a hardware space. I mean, maybe that's a little unfair to what Sony have done with the DualSense, because that's really cool, right? Like, I really do appreciate that. But, you know, at a fundamental level, those guys are just making PCs every time. Nintendo, you know, they're not. They're doing something else, and you know they're going to do something fucking weird this time. So yeah, I think it will be something. But, you know, I still think the point stands, though, right? Because the 3DS was like, holy shit, 3D without glasses? And it turns out no one fucking liked that, and I was like, you know...
Apart from us,
again, the people who just, like, shout about it from the rooftop. But, like, you know, it was fundamentally still a DS. And so I think a lot of people saw it and were like, I have a DS, you know? I don't need that. And, yeah, I think that's the challenge. It's a really tough challenge because you have such a massive install base with this first system. And I don't know, I wonder if part of that, you know, thought behind the account system and carrying stuff over is that desire to sell upgrades to people. You know, because everyone is so used to the phone cycle of stuff. And I think a lot of people have talked for years about, like, what if game consoles got into a more phone-like cycle?
I mean,
I don't think they will, but...
If we are getting to a point where consoles become the phone cycle, I think Nintendo are going to be the last company to get to that point, and it's going to be, you know, Sony or Microsoft.
But I mean it more so in the sense of, like, there's a continuity that you have, and there's a confidence in buying the next thing because you know that everything's going to carry over. All the money you spent on Switch, those hundreds and hundreds of dollars on games, you're going to keep them, right? Because I think that's a lot of people with iPhones is like, oh, I have all this stuff and I don't want to move out of this ecosystem because I spent all the money. So it ties you, it locks you in, right?
I mean, what if it's not the hardware that gets people to buy the Switch successor, but the software? And, you know, what's the average parent's attitude to, like, oh, there's a new Mario Kart that my kid wants, but he or she already has Mario Kart. Why would I get another Mario Kart? And the kid's like, because the new Mario Kart's got Samus and different tracks.
Oh shit, dude, fuck, dude, Samus, it's gonna happen,
you know? Like, is there a possibility that, you know, changing up the software can drive insane numbers of sales on the new hardware? Or does it have to be a combination of a new Mario Kart, but also, like you said, Switch successor is going to have some sort of gimmick that is just that crazy innovation, on top of the fact that they're also going to have some really safe games, like, I don't know, the next Animal Crossing, pretty safe, right? Like,
you're right, yeah.
Is that the success, that it's that almost trilogy of where aspects are gambles, but other aspects are really safe?
Yeah, I mean, the Switch kind of was that, in a sense, right? Like, the Switch was a gamble as well, but it was really like, okay, what if we refined this Wii U idea, okay? Like, what if we took this and we just, like, shaved off some stuff and just made it work this time?
But we'll still have Switch Sports and 1-2 Switch and ARMS, you know?
I think the difference with Switch was that the gimmick wasn't a weird method of interacting with games. It was a tried and true method of interacting with games, but you could do multiple... You could basically just take that idea of handheld and you know... like. But the way that you...
You can still use it and forget about it. You couldn't really do that with the Wii.
Right, it doesn't fundamentally change the way you play games from a control standpoint. It gives you the freedom and the flexibility to decide how you... But you're still playing games with buttons and an analog stick, right, at the end of the day. It's not like the DS touchscreen. It's not like the Wii's waggle. It's a tried and true, it's a traditional approach, but the gimmick was, oh, what if you could do it in bed and then at your TV? That was the difference. And I think that, you know, they still had weird, there's a fucking IR sensor on your Joy-Cons, right? Why is that there? Because Koizumi wanted to fucking eat an apple and then, like, make it happen on the screen at the same time. Like, right? Like, that's why, has it ever been used since fucking 1-2 Switch? Maybe in the fucking horse game, 3-4, what the fuck is it called?
1-2
Switch. Switch bar, oh, I can't fucking...
Bar. I played that Way Forward game that I can't remember the name of.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
Caroline,
yeah.
And there was IR sensor bollocks in that game.
Oh, my God, okay.
It was... weird.
Yeah.
And I had drag Caroline to the finish line of that game.
Right.
Kicking
and so, like, the fundamental gimmick of Switch was pretty plain, but, like, you have Joy-Cons with HD Rumble, you have the Joy-Cons themselves as a detachable controller. Like, there is still a lot of weird Nintendo funkiness in the Switch, and I guarantee you there will be weird Nintendo funkiness in whatever the successor is.
Mm.
Because they always want to put something different in there. They have to have a point of differentiation. And I think it's just going to happen. Yeah, I think it's inevitable. Interesting question that's asked about subscription versus virtual console and having the option for both. I mean, I think it doesn't make sense for Nintendo to do it, right? Because
I feel like there's just no going back, is there?
Because if you offer people the ability to buy something piecemeal versus subscribing and having a temporary access to it, I think it depends on the person, right? Like, most people will be like, oh, I played Mario on Game Boy when I was young, I want that. And they're like, that's...
And then I say it stayed subbed for the next 3 years without playing any more games.
Right, and that's the thing, right? Like, they, if you get them on the subscription, then you get a recurring payment, even though they're only playing Mario Land 2.
Yeah.
Versus if you give them Mario Land 2, they buy it and then they never spend any more money in your store anymore, right? So I think, yeah, we are going to be stuck with this system. I'm okay with it personally because I always like just dipping into stuff for old games anyway. I'm never going to, you know, unless I have a desire to be like, right, I'm going to play all the way through fucking, I don't know, Jelly Boy. God forbid I have to play Jelly Boy. Jesus Christ. You know, I was glad that I got to play 20 minutes of Jelly Boy and then I can come on the show and be like, you shouldn't play Jelly Boy. It's a bad video game, you know? Like, I think that's nice. I wouldn't have spent my money on Jelly Boy is what I'm saying. But I can play it if I want.
Yeah,
if I really want to go sicko mode, I can do it. And, you know, all the ones that people would have bought anyway are on there. So it's like, oh, there's Link to the Past. If I want to, I can play Super Metroid on my Switch. You know, that's great. I love the fact that I can be on a plane and be like, oh, I really want to play some Metroid Fusion. Oh, guess what? I can play it. It's right here, which is quite nice.
I just pray that, you know, Nintendo Switch Online is something that they just keep continuing and adding to rather than starting over the piecemeal release of titles again and again. Like, I do think there's a possibility, a slim one, that they do carry it over more or less as it already exists.
Right.
And then add stuff to it. Like, there are still loads of games not on that system. There's still not the GameCube, for example. Like, there are possibilities of other consoles, other games that they do keep adding piecemeal. And the piecemeal thing, it does annoy me, but I appreciate the marketing beat they get out of it. Like, it's undeniable that there was a few people talking about Mario Golf on Game Boy Color. That's kind of cool because it happened at that point in time. I get that, and I appreciate that. But let's just not start the piecemeal again from the start.
Nintendo have a real incentive to not start it again because here's a situation, right? If you're someone who had a Switch and you're subscribed to the service, say you go on to the next system. If they don't have a service for you to subscribe to, you become a lost customer because you cancel your subscription on your old Switch.
Exactly.
And then you don't have anything on your new one. Like, it doesn't make any sense because they're just losing subscribers if they do that. And so, you know, we say this a million times and Nintendo always does a weird thing, but like, logically, surely this time they have to keep it because they have an incentive to keep you as a subscriber through the console transition.
You're going to have the new shiny console. You're going to play your two launch games. You're going to beat those two launch games. You might not go back to them straight away. And you're going to think, what am I going to play on my Switch 2 in the meantime? Oh, well, I'm still subscribed to Switch Online. Let's go play some Mario Golf on Game Boy Color because it's there. It's convenient. There's a satisfaction to playing on the new system regardless of the game it is, occasionally,
where
you've already beaten the hotness and you just want to... What indie game's on here? Like, we were already pumped about a game like Golf Story, for example. It's maybe a bad example, but we bought that game partially because there was a fairly limited number of indie games.
What was that game I bought
initially?
In the summer of Switch 1? There was a game... No, it was like a Mega Man-type game from Way Forward, I want to say. And I bought that, and in no other year or no other platform would I just buy that at full price just from an eShop. But there was nothing else to play. But like, the Switch was the new shiny thing I had, and so I wanted to play something new shiny on it, right?
Yes.
So I think that it just such has a big factor to play. And I think, you know, if you do bridge that gap by having everything carry over from subscription, by also having all of your games carry over and be backwards compatible and downloadable and playable, right? You know, like that fills the void, it fills the gap. And you know, Sony have done it.
What if they charge you money to carry all your games over?
Well, at the very least,
they've done it in the past. You have to pay an upgrade fee.
At the very least, we can guarantee that there will be an animation of some fucking Pikmin carrying that.
Then it's all right? Worth it.
It's all fucking worth it because I get to see the little Pikmin carrying it to the new system. I think it has to. I think they have to. I don't think they can charge. Like, this is the thing. They've got so many new customers. All these new customers are going to be like, what the fuck is this bullshit? They're charging us?
I think they have something like 35 million subs or something ridiculous. Like,
it's huge. It's huge. I against my better judgment, I have hope.
But your point is right. They want to do everything in their power to stop those 37 million people just cancelling their subscription because, you know, you can... I'm kind of predicting the wave of... We're Nintendo fans and we're cancelling our subscription because they're making us pay, like, they're doing piecemeal game releases again. We are cancelling, and it makes a big wave on the internet and actually only impacts about, I don't know, 5 million out of the 35 million subscribers. I can just see that coming, and don't know. I don't know, but who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Well, good stuff. Excellent question. Thanks, George, for writing in, and... yeah, man, I wish I was that smart. 14. Hey, we started listening to podcasts when we were like 18.
Yeah, and good luck with your backlog catch-up.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. There's a lot. Turns out we've talked a lot on the internet over the last 10 years. So
we really have. Really have.
It's a huge amount to listen to if you so want to go through that. But if you so want to end listening to this show, you can do that right now because it's the end, baby. But before we go, Bally, where can they go to send these emails to if they want to do that?
Please send your emails to thisnintendolife@gmail.com. That is thisnintendolife@gmail.com. Like I also said at the start of the segment, we have a Discord server. There's a channel. It is called Emails. Join the server. It's in the description. Go in the channel that's called Emails. Leave a comment, a question, and we will get to that on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is going to do us for today's episode. But of course, we have some things to talk about and shout out and all that sort of stuff, such as you can go to patreon.com/thisnintendolife and get bonus things. For example, I did an audio log at GDC in San Francisco. It's about an hour long, and that's at the $5 tier. So if you want to get on there, that's usually where I put that stuff is at $5, so I'll probably do one for Japan, I'll probably do one for what other events I go to this year.
I mean, MBZ has got a lot of events lined up, so that is a very valuable tier, I might add.
Yeah, absolutely. So there'll be some fun stuff going up there, and it's basically just like whenever I get a chance, I basically pull out my phone and just start chatting about something that's happening. And it's good fun. I enjoy doing those.
Basically the Los Angeles audio log. That's your I'm away from home.
Yeah, exactly. So you can go and listen to me just waxing lyrical about how good America is and just like the best things about it. So it's good fun. I enjoy doing those. So check those out. And there's lots of other stuff on there as well. Bonus episodes, all that. Fun stuff. Bally, we'd like to thank some of our patrons.
Yes, thank you to all of our patrons. It is hugely appreciated, the support you give the show. But I need to shout out some new patrons.
Yes.
We have a new patron, Andrew B. And we also have Orange Thunder, I should say, that an existing patron, but they moved their patronage up to the $10 tier.
Very, very cool. And shout out to Andrew. Andrew is the person who I met at GDC who recognized me as NBZ.
Recognized your actual face.
Your face. Which was fucking crazy. Shout out to him. And hey, thanks for hopping on onto the podcast. So.
Yeah. Very That's cool. awesome, Andrew. Thank you. Thank you for the support. I need to give a shout out to our $10 tier plus patrons as well, MBZ. They are Zach S., Thomas, Matthew, Albert, Wicked Gamer UK Allen, Turtle, Orange Thunder, and I stick him at the end because it just is hilarious every time. At the end is Ali T.
Ali T.
So yeah, thank you all for your $10 tier plus.
It's been a while since we had an Ali T update. I think he's playing Sea of Stars.
Yeah, we can call out. This is how we communicate with Ali T now. So yeah. Ali T, give us an update and we'll say it on the next show.
Yeah, so yeah, he's playing Sea of Stars. I haven't checked my Switch to see his hour count yet.
We did recommend Sea of Stars. So
we did, yeah. He wanted an RPG, so Sea of Stars was a good
one. I think
good
he played a short hike after he did, recommendation. Yes. He was posting on Discord, so we recommended that. And I think then we recommended Sea of Stars. I tried to get him on Octopath Traveler, but it wasn't
You tried to do the hard sell, but then Ali T's like, I just want something chill.
Octopath is not chill.
It's not. It's absolutely not chill at all. No, it's like one of the most hardcore RPGs. So... yeah, that's good stuff. So, yeah, if you want to recommend more games for Ali T, just let him know. But I'm sure he'll be looking for some more in the future. But yeah, that is that's Patreon. So go ahead and support that if you so wish. You can, of course, go and find us on the internet. I am at LordNBZ on all the platforms except for Blue Sky, where I'm at NBZ. Where are you, Bally?
I'm on Twitter at BallyMan91. That's BallyMan91. And that's my same name on Blue Sky.
Lovely. You can find us on Twitter as well at TNL Podcast to follow stuff about the show, what's happening, and get access to a link to the Discord and our YouTube channel. So if you want to join the community or find, you know, that listening on the computer is better. I believe George, who wrote in this time, talked about having it on or watching the podcast, which implies to me that they find it through YouTube, which is cool. So yeah, you can, if you want to have it in the background on YouTube, then that's a good thing to do as well. You can find us on other platforms all across the internet, such as Spotify, Stitcher. You can
I'm getting
download
a bunch of Spotify reviews, so
yeah,
thank you for those. Yeah. I should say ratings. There's ratings.
Yes,
up on there. Little 5-star rating, always appreciated. Yeah.
Absolutely. So go ahead and do that, and you can find us wherever good podcasts are sold, as they say, and subscribe, which means that you just get into your feed every couple of weeks, and it's a good time. It's a good, fun time. And that's it. That's going to do us for this episode. I'm being a bit all over the place with my gaming plans. I think Final Fantasy just kind of like took a fucking big dent of my my March.
Going to Japan is gonna throw it all up in the air again,
potentially, but like I'm gonna bring my Switch, I think, to Japan. It feels right to bring that and not the Steam Deck. It's a Japanese console. I've got to take that, you know. And I've got a few things on there that I'm wanting to dig into. I start of this year I got started on Bayonetta, Syriza and the Lost Demon, and I was really enjoying it, but then new stuff came out and kind of threw me off, so I want to get back to that. And I have a few other things on there that I would
Rabbids,
like to
Sparks of
play
Hope.
Yes, I still have Sparks of Hope, Chilling, a few
Skyward
games there.
Sword.
I am not going to play Skyward Sword because I cannot play that handheld, because you have to do motion control. I will not abide by this bullshit using an analog stick for Skyward Sword. It is frankly a crime against the game, and you know, must be motion control. That's how that game is supposed to be played. But yeah, I've got a few things on there that I will be digging into on my Japan trip. Yeah, lots of stuff coming out.
We're a bit all over the place, but the show will still come out. We've got some plans.
Yeah.
So just check out the feed and we'll sort you right out.
Yeah, we'll probably just update next time on the plan and stuff like that. But
MBZ's going to Japan. I'm going to Ireland. One, both islands, I guess. So that's exciting.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So, look forward to that stuff. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with another episode for you, talking about Nintendo, video games, and everything in between. Till then, thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon. Bye-bye! The musical interlude used on today's show was Bug Boss from Pepper Grinder. Copyright Devolver Digital 2024.